as I wait. Heart of
Hello,
God.
Hello, welcome to the Growth Group podcast, where we believe that spiritual growth happens better in circles than it does in rows. My name is David Haken. I'm joined by Jonathan Markham, the pastor of New Life Christian Fellowship here in Pacifica, California, and we record these podcasts to help you go deeper with Sunday's teaching, both in your small group and your individual walk with the Lord. This week, we're continuing our series. Just kidding, we're just starting our series. I always say that, but it's not true this week because we're starting a brand new series, called Ordinary Men, looking in particular at 12 men, the disciples, Jesus' apostles, the name that he gave them. But we're going to be looking at just six of them, won't we?
Yes, we are. There's six of them we're going to look at particularly. And the reason why we're going to do this is because, again, you know, we've been looking time and time again at the concept that we've been given that we are sent and sending others. And the most specific example we see in Scripture here is the fact that Jesus sent his disciples.
Right.
And he sent them, he called them to himself, so they were called to be disciples, and then he sent them out. Mm. And so I think that we can learn a lot from, okay, who did he call, how did he call them, and what sort of people were they, and what sort of a trajectory do we see in their lives? You know, it wasn't right at the beginning of the 3 years of his ministry that he called them. He probably called them maybe 1.5 years, maybe a year into the ministry.
Really? I wasn't aware of
that. So,
I know that the call narrative happens a little bit later in some of the
right.
Gospels.
Well, what I've read indicates that it may have been as much as 1.5 years into his ministry that he actually called them as disciples. But, you know, I'm sure people have different opinions about that, like most things in Scripture. They weren't with him for 3 years. That's pretty apparent.
I guess we can't use that silly little quib anymore where we train our pastors for 3 years in seminary for a 30-year ministry. Jesus, on the other hand, spent 30 years in training for a 3-year ministry.
Well, I think that Jesus was.
That's true.
Jesus
was.
It's not
about the disciples, is it?
It's not about the disciples.
Yeah, and they were most likely all younger than Jesus. Perhaps not Matthew, maybe, or something.
Right. I mean, we're not given too many clues we know very little about their actual lives, which is really interesting. We just see their interaction with Jesus, which is, well, obviously the important part. But, you know, we know that Peter was married because they went to Peter's wife's mother's house. But whether any of the others were married, I don't think we know. I mean, we know that Peter and Andrew were brothers. We know that James and John were brothers. But really, and we know, of course, that we know something about James and John's mother, but that's really our information about their family life is pretty sparse, shall we say.
Mm-hmm. So any kind of content we're going to be preaching on, you're going to be preaching on, is going to be in their interaction specifically with Jesus during those 1.5, 2 years they have.
Right. We may extend a little way into their activities after his resurrection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In fact, we certainly will be doing that in this first week because James, the brother of John, was martyred. Mm. He was the first apostolic martyr, which is interesting.
Well, let's jump into our first question, kind of more of a general question, not about James specifically. It's called Following the Followers. Who were Jesus' 12 disciples? Which men stand out to you from that list? Before we begin this series and examine closely the passages which mention them, what do you think we will learn from studying their lives? And what do you think the disciples thought that word meant, being a disciple?
Well, it's interesting. I'm not quite sure whether they used that word or whatever, but there was certainly a concept of following a rabbi.
Yeah.
In their time, and the interesting thing about it is, you know, there's a fairly well documented education process which young Jewish boys went through, but the interesting thing is that most of it was prompted by the parents or the boy themselves, whereas Jesus, the thing that's unique about Jesus' disciples is he chose them, he picked them out. And so the fact that he picked them out means that he chose them for very specific reasons, some of which seem a bit obscure, most of which seem a little bit obscure, because they clearly were not highly educated men.
Right. It seems almost random. You know, Jesus is walking along the Sea of Galilee, and there's a boat out there, and he calls to them, and all of a sudden they become fishers of men.
I think most people seem to think that it is reasonable to believe that they'd had some contact with him.
We know at least some of them were disciples of John the Baptist already.
Yes, I think James and John were disciples of John the Baptist. Hmm. And the concept of a disciple was the fact that you were an apprentice to that rabbi, and that you sought to learn from him and live like him. Yeah. That was the concept of being a disciple. So I think that certainly for James and John, they were familiar with that idea with John the Baptist. And so I imagine that that's what they thought. That's what they thought they were getting into, that they were going to follow the teachings of the rabbi.
Yeah, that definitely helps us, you know, get better clarity on what Paul means when he continually says, imitate me as I imitate Jesus.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's really interesting because, you know, I mean, sort of, I mean, James and John, they may have been John the Baptist's disciples, but there's no indication that until Jesus calls them that they gave up their...
Right, left their nets.
They left their nets. Mm-hmm. They were probably part of a reasonably well-off family.
To be able to abandon their trade like that.
Right, with Zebedee and with their dad. Hmm. And then the other interesting thing is that John clearly knew the high priest.
Yeah, that's right.
Because John, and so that probably means the family had some reasonably high-level contacts of some sort.
They supplied the seafood
to the house of the high priest. Yeah.
Well, let's look at the second question, which is kind of about James's call to ministry. We've called it Jamestown, not sure why. What was James's job pre-Jesus? How did this profession and his unique call experience give a deeper meaning to his future leadership role in the church? How does the account in Luke 9 confirm Jesus' special name for James and his brother John in Mark 3? How is such a personality useful in the church, and how can it be a detriment?
Ah, good question.
A lot going on there. So his call, and then also his unique name, which is a son of thunder, right?
Boanerges.
There we go. I was afraid to pronounce it.
Boanerges, sons of thunder. So
such
clearly
a cool name.
They were. But his call was... He was asked to come away. He was a fisherman,
that's it.
As we already said, and therefore he was mending his nets. And that was, that was probably, he and his brother and his father were all, so they probably had their own boat, and they had a fishing business. And, it was probably a reasonably successful fishing business because they were able to leave their dad by himself, apparently. So probably they had some other fishermen there. But his call was, but Jesus, it's Jesus that makes the connection that that where the connection between being a fisher, a person who catches fish, mm-hmm. and a person who catches men,
a fisher of men. Great expression.
Therefore, and Jesus makes that connection, and he says, "Look, the gospel is the good news is that men need to hear and be captivated by the good news of Jesus."
You know that, like in the ancient catacombs underneath the streets of Rome and stuff, they had pictures of the Jesus fish, right? That,
yeah.
that simple symbol we have now on the backs of our cars,
yeah.
and whatnot. I wonder, does that relate to Matthew 4:19 being a fisher of men, or is it about the five loaves and the two fish? Anyways.
Well, I mean, I think fish were very much a part of their culture. Because they, well, certainly where Jesus lived and moved, they were nautical people. There were lots of people involved in
nautical, at least in their lakes.
Not in the sea.
Yeah, they were, that was off limits for them.
Yeah, but it was. But they fished a lot. They used fish. They ate fish.
Yeah.
So fish was a picture that they,
Jesus was a chef making breakfast with fish.
With fish, yeah, all of those things. So, and Jesus told them, put your nets over there and you'll catch some fish. So, you know,
We move on to our next question, any thoughts on James and John's invitation to call down lightning on
I think this is one of the things that we see, or that these guys were passionate people,
mm-hmm.
And they were intense, and I think we see that because, I mean, I think if we've been looking at the Enneagrams,
right.
in the staff, and you look at different forms of passionate people, and it would appear that they were calling them sons of thunder means that, you know, they were fairly volatile. But John, of course, was also looked at as the disciple who Jesus loved, and there was all of that aspect of his emotion. But James, it's we need to respond, and we need to respond with passion.
Right, right.
And
that's what Elijah did in the last, you know, few days of his life.
And, you know, there's a sort of John the Baptist-y, Elijah.
That makes sense if they were, in fact, disciples.
Disciples of John the Baptist,
That makes sense.
So that's the sort of line that they obviously had, because
what they're attracted to.
Right.
Yeah. Well, those two men and Peter as well were part of Jesus' inner three, and that's what this next question is entitled. A handful of passages in the gospel seem to indicate that Jesus had an inner circle, even among the disciples. Who composed this inner circle? Why would Jesus select a small handful of people to specially pour into? Why do you think he brought aside these men in the above stories? What did they need to learn from Jesus, and what did Jesus need from them?
Well, he doesn't say why he picked those three.
Right.
But
there's only a handful of stories that isolate the three.
Right.
There's the Transfiguration, going up on the mountain.
Right.
He brings those three. There's the raising of Jairus' daughter.
Daughter, and then finally the Garden of Gethsemane.
Right. I don't think there's any others.
Not that I recall. Mm. But clearly what Jesus was doing, something which I think is really interesting in so many ways. He was modeling the importance, I think, of pouring intensely into the 12 people, but actually, you know, recognizing that perhaps the intensity of those experiences was something which he needed to restrict to a smaller number of people.
Mm.
I mean, they clearly weren't any better than anybody else. Because you look at their responses in Gethsemane, they went to sleep. At the Transfiguration, nobody says anything except Peter, who says, "Let's make a tent for all three of these people."
Right. Jesus should have picked the disciples that are night owls. Yes. But
I think that the principle of the fact that you cannot pour with great intensity into a large number of people, I think is that
we're not designed that way.
No, and I think that with a smaller number of people, you are able to really engage and really get to know people. And I suspect he picked, I think he picked them for probably very specific roles. I mean, when you look at John was the last to die. And Peter was such a major part in played such a major part in the early church, and then James, interestingly enough, was the first martyr. So they all had significant roles to play.
Yeah, that's there's a lot of stuff to look into there. That's great. Our last question is called Dubious. Read carefully the account often titled "A Mother's Request" in Matthew 20. What did she want for her two boys, and they wanted for themselves? Do you think their unique personality and closeness to Jesus inspired this request? Are there any lessons you find especially difficult to learn because of your unique personality? What lessons did Jesus try to impress upon them in this moment?
I think maybe it was that there was an the fact that they had obviously come very close to Jesus, I think that probably did help them.
They thought they were entitled to that place of privilege, perhaps.
They thought it was okay to ask.
The other disciples didn't think so.
The other disciples didn't see. I mean, it would be particularly interesting to know what Peter thought. But we're not told. The other ones weren't that pleased. Uh-huh. Yes, I mean, yeah, the story is that, in one gospel, they come with her mother. And in the other gospel, they ask themselves. Now, which one of those happened? Clearly, his mother was involved somehow.
Some combination of the both.
They asked Jesus, she or they asked Jesus, well, when you ascend to your glory, can we sit on your right and your left hand?
Mm-hmm. Clearly thinking about a physical restoration of national Israel, the kingdom to Israel.
Right. And so Jesus points something out to them, and he says, only God decides
what's interesting though is that he validates that there will be someone sitting. Yes, right. like those are legitimate roles that someone's gonna
sit there.
Wild.
But God's gonna decide who it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's because he also says to them, can you deal with the problems sacrifice that I'm gonna, and they said, oh yeah, of course we can. Interestingly enough, Jesus then says, well, God will decide those questions. And then John actually is the first disciple. James is the first disciple to be martyred.
Yeah.
He's teaching them, this is what God, there are decisions that only God can make. Mm-hmm. And he actually defers to his father, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's part of it. Another big part of it is you shouldn't be seeking this place of privilege and exaltation for yourself in the first place. It's the Gentiles that lord it over one another.
Right.
It shall not be so among you. Just as I came to be a servant, so you, those who are the highest in the church, are to be servants as well.
Right.
Mm. Yeah, I'm sure that's a lesson we'll be learning again and again as we study these disciples.
Yeah, I think we will. And because they were very ordinary people, and that's encouraging for us.
All right, well, let's look at one more ordinary person next week.
Yes.
As I wait, heart of God, satisfy and sustain.